You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
We both, on both the band and the label side, there was no sort of argument really about this. We both decided, look, if we're not going to be able to tour to back up this is our first album on with you guys, we want to do well for you, and they obviously were like the same back. So we very quickly decided to postpone stuff. I think originally it was a sort of 3 or 4 months postponement, see, because obviously no one was really expecting things to go on for a good year and a half, I don't think, at first. So yeah, it just got pushed back a couple of times, but then to the point where I think we just sat down with them at the end of last year and was just like, look, even if we can't tour, we need to get this out because people need to hear it, and we've been sat on this for 2 years now, almost, sort of thing. So
hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. Hope you had a glorious weekend, because I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter, and I have teamed up with them to bring you the first edition of Heavy Montreal Presents Vox and Hops Brutal Montreal. That's right, a metal and craft beer festival is happening on December 17th at Corona Theater here in Montreal. Performing that night is my band Cryptopsy alongside my friends In the Agonist, The Great Sabatini, Necrotic Mutation, and Burning the Oppressor. All night long, you will be able to enjoy killer craft beers from some of Quebec's best breweries, such as BG Brasserie Urbaine, Missorum Brassatorium, Brasserie du Bas-Canada, Sir John Brewing Company, Cinquième Bottle, and Brassard de Montréal. I am so excited for Brutal Montreal to arrive. If you want to come to this show, I gotta tell you, the tickets are flying. They're selling extremely, extremely quickly. So if you want to come to Brutal Montreal, you should absolutely pick up your tickets via the link in the description of this podcast. I am so stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and I can't wait for Brutal Montreal. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to tell a friend about the podcast. If there's someone in your life, someone that just loves music, not necessarily a metalhead, not necessarily someone that likes extreme music, just that person in your life that is just so into music, tell them about the podcast. You can tell them that there are over 300 episodes with some of the world's best musicians for them to listen to on their favorite podcast platform. And I ask questions to go behind the persona to discover who the human is that is creating this awesome music. If you were to encourage one of your friends to become a future Vox and Hopshead, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, on today's episode, I'm with Daniel Barter of Dune. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 308.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today I'm with Daniel Barter of Dune. He plays guitar and is a vocalist in that band. Very, very stoked to be with you. How are you doing? Let's start with that.
Cheers. Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Thanks a lot for having us on. This is awesome.
Absolutely. It had to happen because ever since I started listening to your new release, Edamon Ainka. Did I say that right?
You did. That's fine.
Excellent. I meant to ask you before we started recording, and as I was about to say it, I was like, oh, I hope I don't murder this album's name, which I love the record. So stoked to have a chat with you. Let's start. I like to start dark and then move towards the light. let's talk about how you coped throughout this time at home, being locked in, getting released, getting told to calm down again. How did you cope with 2020, which is now lingering into 2021?
I mean, yeah, 2020 wasn't the best of years for us, but I mean, so band-wise, I mean, personally, coped all right. It sucked being away from music for this long. Same with the band. I mean, I think we actually finished recording that summer 2019.
Okay.
So 2020, we were good to go. Good to go with the album, good to go with touring. Everything was set. And then, obviously, COVID hit. And so that all got pretty much cancelled and postponed for the year. So same boat as everyone else. No gigs, no playing. Has majorly sucked. But, I mean, we've all stayed healthy. We've all... None of us had anything too bad happen during COVID. So on that front, we're like, blessed on that. But yeah, music-wise, it's not been the best year for everyone. But, well, I mean, we've stayed busy. We've been working on, there's a few videos we've managed to do in the meantime, working on a couple of live sessions, things like that. I've upped my video editing skills quite a bit from editing a load of extra footage and bits and pieces together. So yeah, I've been staying busy. But very, very much looking forward to getting back into playing now that stuff's opened up again.
Especially because you guys were, you know, getting signed to Metal Blade. This is your big release, right?
So. Yeah, right. So, I mean, that went through whilst we were recording still. So I think we're finalizing that sort of... Yeah. So that was awesome. So we're finalizing all of that. And I think the original plan was a sort of spring 2020 release. And then
really? Okay.
Tour in the summer. But then as sort of January, February came around, we both, on both the band and the label side, there was no argument really about this. We both decided, look, if we're not going to be able to tour to back up this is our first album with you guys. We want to do well for you. And they obviously were like the same back. So we very quickly decided to postpone stuff. I think originally it was a sort of 3 or 4 month postponement, because obviously no one was really expecting things to go on for a good year and a half, I don't think, at first. So yeah, it just got pushed back a couple of times. But then to the point where I think we just sat down with them at the end of last year and was just like, look, even if we can't tour, we need to get this out because people need to hear it. And we've been sat on this for 2 years now, almost, sort of thing, so...
Which is very difficult to create something, and a lot of time goes into creating a record, and it's a long record, so it's not like a 30-minute album banger. A Cryptopsy album, we hit 38 minutes, we're like, that's it, we did it, we're done. No, you guys go all in on this. There's many tracks, they're all, you know, 8-minute plus, so it takes time to create that, and then you took time to record that, and then you had to sit on it for...
Oh, yeah, I mean, as I say, 18 months, I think. Like there were a couple of tracks from it, so I think the last sort of gigs we were playing were around November 2019. We played out in Poland, so we were at that point. There were a couple of tracks from it that were already in the live set as well. So like we were ready to. Like obviously, as you say, we'd spent so much time with these tracks, and there was still a bit of work to do to transpose them from sort of album to the live sort of performance, because there always is. But yeah, I mean, as you say, you're very invested in it, and yeah, I think especially with this album, we'd spent about 8-12 weeks overall in the studio with it. So
wow, okay.
But as I say, Metal Blade were really supportive throughout the whole thing. Obviously, for them, they had no idea what was going on with the world either at that point. And yeah, they've been fantastic throughout it. Very supportive of and supporters when wanting to do music videos, bits and pieces like that, just to keep the sort of momentum going with stuff. And now it's out there, so we can just finally be a bit more positive about it.
Absolutely. And it's a monstrous album. Love it. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. Now, what beers do you have on your side that we're going to be sharing today virtually, Daniel?
So it's quite a nice sunny day here, so I've gone for a couple of local sours. I've got... Obviously, your viewers won't be able to see. But I've got a one from Kirksville Brewery, which is just down the road from me, which is called a Vedita Fruited Sour. And that's apparently... I've not tried this one before. I've tried some of their other beers. They're really good brewery. But this one is apparently a lime, pineapple, chili, coriander, and mint sour. So excited for this. This is one I'm going to crack first, I think. And then the second one is a... Salty Kiss, which is from Magic Rock Brewing, who are also Yorkshire-based, basically. So I have this one I've tried before. It's very nice. Can highly recommend that if you're into the sort of saltier sour things.
A nice goza, yes. And the fruited sour, that's cool. It's cool that the fruited sour game has made its way to the UK. That makes me excited. The land of pure hand pumps beer is succumbing to the beer trend hype, so that makes me definitely happy. On my side, I got this brand new beer from Belgel. It's their Keller Beer Lager. This is really cool because Belgel is basically a macro brewery, a big brewery here. One of the most independent macros that are going on, Belgel. They've been brewing here in Montreal since 1988. But just recently, they opened up a craft sector, like a tiny tap house, where they brought in this really cool brewer called JP. And he's been doing some phenomenal stuff. So this is their Keller Beer Lager. It says that it's 100% natural carbonation on it. It's cool. It's a 5.2%, perfect beer for 11 a.m., right?
Yeah, that's grand. I'm a bit late here, but I think, you're beating me on that. I'm only on, these are four. So it's fine. Early afternoon.
While I pour this out, I would love to hear about your very first beer, Daniel.
Oof, very first beer, as I crack this one as well. So I'd like to say it was something cool, but probably it was more Foster's or Stella in a pack that someone's older than me's gone to a shop to buy in a high school party, you know. Warm cans of Stella.
Cheers and to then, those.
Yeah. And then later on, how about yourself? What was the first?
Oh, it's a beer that doesn't exist anymore. It was a Lucky Lager. Also a lager like this one. It was horrible. It was warm. It was at a house party. I've spoken about it a lot on the podcast. It was really fun. I'm still friends with the people that we drank with that night and learned to drink with. I've grown since then.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think I progressed rapidly on to sort of more ales and stuff when I was about 17 or so. We had a lot of Sam Smith's pubs around here, which was grand, a few venues. So that was the sort of... That's the sort of first nice beer I can remember drinking. So Sam Smith do a lot of like organic. Everything they do is organic. And they used to own, I don't know if they still do own a lot of bars, but there was a brewery and they used to own a lot of pubs and a couple of venues. The Bradford 1 in 12 used to go watch a lot of punk gigs there, and that was all Sam Smith's and Ayingerbrow Lager, which was very good but very strong. But this will be what you want when you go to see punk gigs when you're 16, I guess.
Amazing. This is nice, clean. It's got like a little honey-ish feel to it. Very drinkable. It's wonderful. Cheers to you.
Nice. Cheers.
I'd love to hear about the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
So my parents would have been a lot of Pink Floyd, Peter Gabriel, Genesis, a bit of Runrig. If you know Runrig, maybe not. Runrig were like a Scottish, I'd say, sort of pop indie sort of rock band in the early 90s. But I don't think they made it much out of the UK. But yeah, a lot of sort of 70s, 80s prog with my mum and dad. And then I had two older sisters, and one of them was very much sort of into sort of indie and sort of punk at the time, which I think is where I started then going off the curve as far as my parents were concerned a bit.
That's a very good base to have to start with, the progressive rock scene like that, the gods of progressive rock. It's a good foundation for you to grow from. What band would have been your first band that didn't come from your parents, that didn't come from your sister, something that you brought into the house that either shocked them or they liked it, or what was your first love that didn't come from them?
So I think I'm a new metal kid by heart, so I think 100%. Excellent. It was a great time.
It's coming back.
But the one that I can remember my parents first properly hating that I properly loved would have been Slipknot, for sure. I think once I was cutting out pictures of Slipknot and putting them on my bedroom wall, that's when my mum was sort of, this is no longer listening to The Offspring, you know.
We've lost them.
Yeah.
What was it about Slipknot that was just too much? The extremity of it, or the vulgarity of the lyrics?
I think, I mean, it was, I think just the extremity of it. I mean, I'd listened to a few, there were a few new metal bands around that I'd listened to at that point, sort of like Korn had put out a couple of albums at that point, but that first Slipknot album, when that dropped, with that opening double kick drum on that, is it Sick, the first track?
Yeah.
That at the time blew my mind. Like, and I don't think I'd heard, I mean, I was aware that death metal existed. Like, my sister had a couple of older mates and they were into that sort of stuff, but that was the first one I can remember getting into something that heavy, or heavy at the time, obviously. And yeah, my parents not liking it probably helped quite a lot. but yeah, Slipknot was the first one I probably would be like, that was my 15, 16-year-old damn band crush, definitely.
Same thing. My mother did not like Slipknot, but she did appreciate the drumming. So
oh, nice.
Mad props, yeah, and rest in peace, Joey Jordison, for bringing extreme drumming to the forefront of music. Without him, who knows how many of these new bands that are out there wouldn't have started playing these extreme drummer kids.
Massive
cheers to Joey for doing what he did.
Cheers to Joey.
I was very, very lucky that I picked up the first record, or a friend of the group, shout out to Vince, picked up that first record of Slipknot. And then the week later, they were coming through Montreal. It was like this weird happenstance, one of those things. And it was that first, one of their first tours they were opening. It was Cold Chamber headlining, Machine Head, and Slipknot opening. And Slipknot ate everyone alive. I was terrified. It was wonderful.
I can't imagine Slipknot opening for Cold Chamber now. That's incredible.
It didn't make sense in Montreal.
I spoke
to other people that had seen that tour too, and they all said the same thing, that Slipknot ate them alive that night.
I think I saw them on their first tour, Leeds, back in that album. Just ridiculous. Most ridiculous thing I've seen live at that point was Slipknot.
Let's talk about shows. Yeah. Your first show. Do you remember the first show that you went to go see? I imagine it's one of those punk rock shows that you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, so I mean, I'd been to a couple of festivals that they put on locally with sort of my mum and dad and my sister. And then I think the first proper show I could remember going to see, I think it was probably new metal before punk, but it would have been new metal show in Leeds that was mainly UK band, so I don't know if you know this, but it was 1 Minute Silence. Earth Tone 9 and a band called Linear 77.
They all have numbers.
Yeah, they all have numbers. I think Linear 77 were on either Roadrunner or Eric at the time. I can't remember. But that was the first show me and my mate from school went to. No parents. All new metal bands. Circle Pits, excellent.
How about your first time on stage?
That was a band I did in high school with the same mate who went to the gig. So that would have been at the Primrose pub in Leeds, which is a tiny little pub. It's not even really a venue. You sort of move the tables out the way and put a PA system in the corner, as all the regulars hide through in the other room. But yeah, so that was with my sort of high school band, Ibosisk. I think we opened with a cover of Seasons in the Abyss, and then followed that with Fade to Black. I think there were a couple of Metallica songs in there, but I can't remember exactly what was in there. It was mainly covers.
Amazing.
And mainly sort of like parents and school friends in attendance. But no, it was good. It was good fun. We thought we were great at the time, you know. I don't know quite what that Seasons cover actually sounded like, but it was great fun. And like I said, I opened a career with Slayer, so that's that one, you know.
You did well. Let's talk about, I want to circle back to Edelman Anka. You didn't get to get the dream release that you could have had. Now you have some shows coming up with Bosque, and you got some shows coming up with Deluge, who I love. But if you could have organized your own tour to put you in front of the perfect crowd so that Dune could grow and capture those fans and they could become future fans, what bands would be on that bill?
Opeth.
Oh, yeah.
Opeth.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would say Mastodon, so I'm going to put Mastodon in, but I'm going to say on a caveat that they go back and have to play, like, at least Crack the Scam before.
Mm-hmm.
and then, probably Tool for ultimate exposure, you know.
I would like that. That would be a very nice bill.
I think it'd be a nice bill. Well, it would be a nice bill, you know. That'd be a ridiculous bill for us to be playing on.
I agree. I agree. I definitely feel, though, those moments. And listening to the record the first few times, I was like, oh, this reminds me of this. This reminds me of that. But then all the more that I kept digesting the record, and I'll come out and say it right now, it's probably my album of the year, honestly.
Oh, man.
It's probably the album that I've listened to the most this year, that I've returned to listen to. And the Thirsty Thursday gang, Jerry Monk, who curates the Vox and Hops Brutal Awakenings playlist, is the guy that introduced me to the record. Jerry Monk rules. He also thinks it's going to be on his year-end list. And it's just a killer record, but you are so close to it, and it's so far ago that you created this. Is there something about it that you don't like that you wish you could change?
Well, I mean, first of all, mate, thanks a lot. That's high praise indeed. Kind of blushing on my end here. I don't know, that's a tough one, because we've had so long to sit back on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did actually end up, because we ended up knowing it wasn't coming out, we ended up going back and remixing a couple
really?
Of things.
Okay.
Just to tweak a bit, as you say, when you sat on something that long.
Oh, yeah.
And at the start of last year, we then knew it wasn't, we had another 9 months at least before it was dropping. I mean, I don't know. I mean, because everything's still so fresh, we've still yet to play 8 out of 10 of these tracks live at all. They've still almost got some life to sort of be breathed into them by us doing that, because stuff always tends to change, and we tend to, like, sometimes recompose a few bits and pieces for actually doing them live. But no, I mean, there's definitely stuff we've sort of gone, we'll maybe do a few bits different next time, of how we've re-recorded the drums or bits and pieces. But I think right now, we're just sort of very much enjoying it being out. I mean, maybe tweak a couple of guitars, but apart from that, like, we're very happy with it. And sort of great to see everyone else sort of feel the same at the moment.
At first listen through, there's these moments, the interludes that go through. There's moments I'm like, is this over? And then, oh no, it's not. Okay, there's more.
Yeah.
That happened to me a few times. I was like, because it gets real quiet, like real quiet, especially if I'm like cooking in the kitchen and I'm playing it in the living room.
Oh yeah, which was you can't how have I the discovered it. During it.
Yeah. So a bit long-winded in those areas, but I love it. And I gotta tell you, like, the riff of the album for me is Court of the Matriarchs, that tapping thing that goes and comes back and then comes back heavier.
Yeah.
I love it. I was sitting down right before recording this with my wife, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm talking to that band, you know, that band I listen to all the time. And I put the song and she was like, oh yeah, I know that song, you play it all the time. But but it's not an album where it is about songs. It's about an album. You guys have created something that is not standard in the modern age of, you've created an album. It's like, I don't know. I imagine there's a concept behind it. I didn't read into that, but it feels like an album. It's meant to be listened to in its whole, in its entirety, versus just a single aspect, which is rare in modern music.
Yeah, definitely. And that's sort of the aim we've had on this, and a sort of album previous to it as well, is that it is, there is a sort of, I mean, lyrically, there's the sort of concept running through start to finish. I mean, each track has its own sort of place, but then it's very much done as you say, as a whole, and mm-hmm. we very much push it as we listen to it as a whole. It'll make more mm-hmm. sense as a whole. The tracks are great, but start to finish is, and there's a sort of arguments that go on, as you probably know yourself, during recording of exactly what's going to go where. But I think usually by the time we sort of have the tracks ready to go into the studio, we already have an idea of the order. Usually when writing them as well, they'll be the order already going down and those sort of ideas. And then that also influences all the lyrics as well, because usually the music's all done, usually before we start doing the lyrics. Because otherwise you're suddenly writing lyrics on a track that then end up track 8 at instead of track 2. It's
a pain in the ass, I can tell you that. I've worked in that way before, and I don't work that way anymore. So
yeah.
A linear concept is very difficult versus an umbrella concept where you can just talk about, it doesn't matter if it makes sense from A to Z.
Yeah, for sure, Whereas this one has to be, this one's very A to Z, and yeah, there's a lot of, it's a lot because we already know, so if a track's going to be heavy, then it's like, I can start writing lyrics for that because I have a vague idea of it's going to be heavy. So the lyrics don't have to be pleasant, or they can be a bit meaner. But apart from that, it's usually, yeah, waiting till we've got a sort of concept agreed upon to then go through.
It sounds like you write lyrics as a team. Is that something that happens?
Yeah, so what will generally happen is we'll sort of go in and discuss what we're wanting to do as a sort of concept and have a night sort of sat down doing that. I'll then go away and usually sort of flesh out a load of backstory and content and characters and bits and pieces and sort of do the initial run of lyrics, and then on the last album especially, Victor's had a lot more input with a lot of the lyrics as well, so that last one's probably sort of like 50-50 on who wrote exactly what, but we'll both be working on like the same songs lyric wise and stuff, because there's a lot of back and forth between our two vocals anyway, and then it's also because Victor's French, he then isn't working in his first language.
Exactly. Yes.
Which is quite interesting as well, because I'll write, I can maybe write a line and then he'll be like, oh, I can do that like that. And he doesn't pronounce it in any of the way that I would have thought. And that can, sometimes then needs change, or sometimes that's better. And it's quite nice. It's very much a sort of combined effort. Usually over a few beers and a few late night sessions. Pouring over the odd thesaurus or two.
That sounds like fun. Sounds like, yeah, like a perfect night for me. You guys also added a keyboardist album.
Yeah, so on the...
I imagine in the past there was samples going, and when you played live there was samples running, but now you've brought...
Yeah, so on the album previous on A Sharon, where there was sort of a few bits of synth and stuff we'd used on the recording that were just there as a very ambient sort of stuff, just add a bit of extra sort of texture to that. But at that point we didn't use really any of the samples live, or unless basically we could create the same thing using sort of guitars and the effects pedals and we had on there. But yeah, then for this album we very much decided we sort of wanted to push that whole like keys and synth element, not necessarily to the very forefront, but so it's actually an instrument in its own right. And then so Victor basically wrote and recorded all the keys in the studio. And then since then, we now have Evelyn, who's come in to play keys for us sort of live. So she will have, it's an odd one because she's now been playing with us a year and a half. And she's not played a gig yet. So
yeah.
So she has her first gig with us in, what are we on now? So 3 weeks, I think. So so it's exciting. So yeah, so we've had that new lineup sort of. It's all, yeah, next gigs should be all sorts of new stuff.
Fantastic. It's been a long time that you're waiting to get back on stage. I'm very, very lucky that I have the podcast where right before I sit down here, I'm always concerned if I'm prepared enough. Am I going to connect? Am I going to fuck things up? I get that little jitter that I would normally get before stepping on stage. How have you been filling the void of performing live?
I don't know if it'd be so much filling the void, because I don't think there's anything that's really replaced that sort of feeling of being in front of a crowd and playing live. I mean, we've done a few sort of taped sessions and studios, and they've been fun. They've been good fun, but it's not quite the same. I mean, myself, I've done a lot of painting of Warhammer figures in the last
year.
Really?
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Which doesn't help band wise at all, but it's got me through about a year or so of living inside by myself. So
amazing. I have a friend that's really into that. Shout out to Simon. He was at that Slipknot show with me. He was there that first beers. He's got a whole studio in his basement. I just visited him a few weeks ago.
Oh, fantastic.
And he's got like a whole studio set up for painting Warhammer figures.
Nice, nice. I've not got that advanced, but I've definitely more than I was at the start of lockdown.
can you show us one? Do you have one hand nearby? Something you're proud of? Because I know so much work goes into these. Take the time, it's okay.
I'll need to nip up. This is my big...
Oh, hell yes.
Titan. He's currently missing an arm, though, unfortunately. But it's a hard one. They're all magnetized, so it falls to bits.
But, exactly, yes, yes, yes.
But yeah, basically, Warhammer and relearning video editing, which I used to do a lot of when I was sort of younger, and then sort of got that back on the go, and bought myself a camera. So hopefully once stuff's actually opened up again a bit, I can start doing that with a few more other bands and stuff.
Very cool.
So mainly apart from Warhammer, I've basically picked up further hobbies that are only really useful if live music's happening.
So that's actually very cool. So you want to take becoming a person that bands would hit up to create music videos for them, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a web developer by trade, but it's been nice to do a bit more of that on the side. But it was definitely needed a bit of practice.
You had the time, so you used that time creatively and constructively, which is better than destructively. So good for you, because it could have gone either way.
What kept you sane during, apart from the podcast, obviously, yeah.
The podcast and my kids, that's it.
Yeah, oh, fantastic.
But I've been working the whole time too, so.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast.
I do like creating collab beers. I just released 22 of them back in June, where I teamed up metal breweries with past guests from the podcast, the Vox and Hops alumni, for an event called Brutal North America. If you could create a beer for Dune, what style of beer would it be, and what would you call it?
Oh, so we probably all disagree about this.
I love when that happens.
So, but I probably drink most out of anyone, so I'll make the decider. I mean, I don't know. We'd probably have to go for something really cheesy and do like Dune themed, and I mean, quite like Arrakis. No, we will do that. Like the spice melange and make it a weird spicy sour. Seems though that's what I'm currently drinking, and it's delicious.
What would you call it?
So that's what I mean. We could go for like melange, but then we'd probably risk in a bit too much from the Herbert family pushing the Dune branding. So yeah, definitely something weird, sci-fi themed, slightly pretentious.
Craft beer has to be.
Yeah, exactly. Nice hand-drawn tin.
Absolutely, yeah. And a brewery, if you could pick a brewery that you'd like to work with.
Because we're up in Edinburgh as a band, we'd go for Williams Brothers, who's probably one of my favourite sort of Scottish brewers from a band.
Very cool. I will definitely hunt them out next time. I always end up just finding a brew dog, which is an easy
solution
when I'm on tour.
Yeah, for sure.
It's right there. So I go, but next time I'll go check that out. Let's wrap this up. One last question. It probably doesn't happen to you very often because you're very busy painting Warhammer figures. But every once in a while it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Bloody Mary, for sure. And then joint and early 90s anime.
Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time, having a chat with me, talking about your life, music, and craft beer. It really, really very happy that we connected. Huge fan. I'm excited for you to come to North America. You come through Montreal. We're going to hang out if I'm on tour over there. I want to play a festival with you. I want to hang out. I want to watch Dune live. Everyone, please go listen to Edamon Anka. Came out via Metal Blade Records on March 19th. It's going to be on everyone's year-end lists. Just so damn good. Daniel, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, sir. That's been excellent. Cheers for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, was this ever a great conversation. I absolutely love this new Dune record. I recorded this interview a few months ago, honestly, and I just keep listening to the record. It's one of those records that I just keep going back to. And in a year where there was just so much amazing music released, this Dune record, I'm telling you, it's there at the top of my list. It's still there. I love it. Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat with me. I can't wait to hang out with you again in the future. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that by going to my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened throughout the past week in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all the details for any episodes which I've dropped throughout that past week, if I've been a guest on someone else's podcast, as well as any pertinent information for any projects that I have in the works, as well as the links to any upcoming Thirsty Thursday virtual hangs, and, of course, the links to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is curated by my man, Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself, and is available on both Apple Music and Spotify. There is just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I would hate for you to miss a single thing, so please, please sign up to that mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a glorious rest of the week. I will be back on Friday with a brand new episode. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.